Hey, yo, yo, Mike.
Yo, what's up, Grillo B?
Hey, you know about your rights?
What's that?
Man, do you know about your rights?
No, what rights? You mean like the turn signal?
No, man, like rights, the Bill of Rights.
Who's Bill?
You got social media, right?
Yeah.
All right, listen up. You can go on Twitter just to call your teacher stupid. That's your right. I ain't saying you should do it.
I'ma do it.
Don't be surprised if you sent to homeschooling.
Wait, what?
You can gripe, but you were being kind of rude.
Okay.
And you can protest. That's your right, too. You can go to the press because they have the right to write what they like, even though they should type truth. No libel. You can use a Bible or Quran shoot. You can even pray to Zeus to get you back in school. You can pray to any guy. Those are your First Amendment rights. Amendment number 2 is kind of tricky. You're walking through the city eating Skittles in a hood made by Diddy. And the dude thinks you up to no good, so he quickly bares his arms, not those limbs that would be on a grizzly. It's a gun aimed at a boy in a hood like you, Ricky. Hands up, don't shoot. The truth is, you can own your own.
Welcome back to Wokeland.
Hey, we back in this thing. What's
yes.
up? What's good? What's really good?
For those who don't know,
I'm
Anayo.
I'm Elsa.
And we are the Simones.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, we say that every time.
I shouldn't have left you.
It actually hasn't been that long.
Yeah, it has.
No, we just put out Black Women in Tech. That was like 2 weeks ago. This is a monthly show, and y'all got an episode 2 weeks ago, so...
How?
Just saying, this is pretty soon for us.
Let's talk about this episode right quick.
Yeah,
so... This is a special one.
Special episode, not on the schedule.
Not on the schedule, but you know when an opportunity presents itself.
We gotta do it.
Yes. So, we had the opportunity of interviewing a man named, a good friend of ours, Ben Gilbarg.
And another good friend of ours.
Yes.
Grio B.
Mr. Grio B. Shout out to you. Big up yourself. Yes.
Yes. And so, Ben is a... video producer,
director,
editor, media maven, and then Grio B is an educator, teacher,
administrator, and like dope rapper,
right.
Lyricist, rhymer,
mm-hmm.
all of that. This man will teach you all about your history. If you want to learn about the Bill of Rights, if you want to learn about Mansa Musa,
mm-hmm.
if you want to learn
Black inventions,
if you want to know about the Columbian Exchange.
Anything.
Anything.
Grio B, he has an album, a Black History album out. The only Black History album ever made. It's available everywhere. Tidal, Spotify, all of them.
And you check him out on YouTube. He has music videos.
Yes.
Under Schoolyard Rap.
Yes.
And so he's a brother from L.A. And he currently works in Richmond. And he's working at a charter school here.
Mm-hmm.
And so this episode really is centralized by hip-hop and the love that they both have. Ben and Grio B have for hip hop, but how they use that as a tool, as an education tool.
Right.
Right.
And we definitely dive deep into education and, you know, the Oakland school system and just how like difficult it is for kids these days to learn with the current old ass techniques of teaching and how, you know, if we infuse like entertainment or hip hop into the school learning, kids would be a lot more engaged.
Yeah. And we talk about the climate of, like, certain school systems, right? Like, charter schools and versus public schools and why we see so many charter schools popping up nowadays. So, it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. So, it was a really great conversation. I'm sure you guys will learn a lot.
Yeah.
We learned a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you again, Ben and Grio. We know, Grio B, we know you guys are going to be listening in and tuning in. So, we appreciate that.
Yes. And without further ado, here's the episode.
Yay. So you are from New Bedford,
yes,
Massachusetts,
yes,
New B, is that what it is?
New B, the secret city. We got
the
a lot of talent
city.
Hidden in there.
What?
Yeah. Oh, so you said this line before? That did you just create?
Is that a catchphrase?
That's the
tagline.
I can't claim that. One.
Is that actually the name? Like Richmond's the city of like pride and purpose.
That's more like the hip hop. It's the whaling
city.
So we're famous for whaling. We were one of the richest cities in the world from whaling in the
1800s. Wow.
Okay.
That kind of went away though. Yeah. So we're not one of the richest cities anymore. We got our struggles, but it's a lot of diverse peoples and good people and great food and just cool history and a lot of talent.
Yeah.
Secret city.
Yeah. Secret city. How did you get into visual media?
So That's going all the way back to like.
Let's do that.
Yo MTV Raps, watching that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That
you said this show on the phone. Talk about it. Yeah.
You know, I got turned on to hip hop as a young kid by my next door neighbor. Big up Mike. Shout out my man Mike.
Shout out Mike.
Big Mike from the world.
And the show Yo MTV Raps, and I loved music at that. You know, loved hip hop video. And back in that time, there was like the tape. Recorder would eject, and you'd put this fat tape in, and then to play it in the VCR, you'd have to put that tape in another tape, a VCR. This is before your time, too?
Very much so.
Okay. So I'm the senior member of the crew here.
Welcome. We have an elder in the house tonight.
So that, you know, that was like 10 years old making those types. So this is going back like 1987. It was just like, oh, and then I started doing my own hip hop TV show at like age 16 called Put Out the Word.
Okay.
And we used to write record labels and ask them to send us videos.
Oh, wow.
So they would send us like big beta tapes and VHS tapes of videos that either weren't, you know, that evolved. When I was in college, my friend called me, and back then in the 90s, you would hear a lot. Like, I listened to, you know, late 90s, we're talking Outkast, Wu-Tang, Nas, Common. When Common was Common Sense, you know, The Roots, a lot of different like true school hip hop groups, and De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest. And a lot of them were saying the words third eye in their lyrics. Mm-hmm. And then Method Man had this lyric, my third eye seen it coming before it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And all that on like Rap City or at that time. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, we got the exclusives. We used to talk about hip hop, and then inspired me to get a tattoo. Of like a third eye with a feather pen, you can't see it.
Can we see it?
Okay.
I want
to strip down.
Yeah. After the show.
Okay. All right. And then, so my friend called me about a year later. This was 1998, so this is going fast forward.
Yeah.
He was like, "We should start a company, name it after your tat, like Third Eye Productions." And so we started a company called Third Eye Unlimited, which then that went on. It turned into a nonprofit, and I directed that for 13 years. We did hip hop festivals. We did it. Put out the word.
Years.
Yeah, put out the word that what I started as a 16-year-old, ultimately at its peak, was airing in 20 million homes via the Dish Network and Free Speech TV and public access. So we had a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah.
So that's we were trying to like fill a void that when Rap City and BET sold out to Viacom and shifted their content to Bling Bling and Materialism.
Right.
We were like, all right, where's hip hop on the airwaves? Yeah, so we're trying to fill that void. Mm-hmm. So now it's like kind of reincarnation of all that, the modern day Put Out the Word, I would say.
Oh, yes.
I'm talking about what we're doing.
Okay, so hip hop. And so how does one from NB meet?
Oh, so that story.
One from Richmond, California.
So, I have a friend. Big shout out to Cliff Chen.
Hey,
Clifford
Cliff.
Chen.
How are you, Cliff?
He's from LA. Mm-hmm. He was out in San Francisco. He called for an Uber and got an Uber ride from this gentleman right here.
Stop there. I was hustling. You know what I'm saying? listen.
You don't have to.
Hey, man.
I was hustling. Uber's the hustle.
It's the Bay Area.
Course,
you got to have multiple streams of income. Okay.
Exactly.
Yes.
And of course, as a good hustler, he's, you know, B's talking about Schoolyard Rap and his thing. And Cliff's like, man, I got to connect you with my boy Ben. Mm-hmm. And we connected, and I heard his Our Story album. And I was like, damn, how come I didn't know about this? Like, jeez, this is gold right here. And then, essentially we were talking about, he was trying to hire me to produce a video. And I was like, Black made that. You need a video for that.
Yeah.
Like, that was the one joint I felt could be, like, the most viral on the album.
Mm-hmm.
And it just turned out that I ended up having funding to produce content. And I called him, like, hey, let's just partner. You don't need to pay me. Like, let's do this. And
like that?
Mutually beneficial. Yeah.
Dang.
It worked out perfectly, actually.
You got a lot of YouTube subscribers off of that video.
So Black Made That is on YouTube. And if you want to shout out any other streaming services or wherever else you can find it, I don't know. But
The Facebook Big Picture Anthems as well.
That's what the video is.
Okay. But that music video, Black Made That, has like 70,000 views on YouTube or something like that.
Yeah, and that's just YouTube. Do you know the official count? It's like 73K or
73, I think. And then Facebook, it well over, I mean, shared over, I think it was a million already on that. Well, that one page, not pirated, they took it. They just took it and then ran it as their own video. Yeah. But that page had a huge reach.
They had like almost, the last time I checked, it had almost 700,000 views and it had like 25,000 shares. So. Mm-hmm. And then you have Instagram. So if you tabulate it all around, it's all around all a million views.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
A million.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was good on that one. It's really dope.
Yeah. And when you guys were connected, where was Schoolyard Rap at that point?
Schoolyard Rap was, I just started my path on doing not free shows. I just finished the free shows the following year. So I was actually starting to get paid to do some shows at school. So we go out to schools and do performances and lectures. Mm-hmm. And I was really contemplating my next steps, like whether or not I was going to leave or stay. It was at the middle of this school year. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, let's do this, man. Schoolyard Rap was right at the cusp of, you know, marketing and pushing it out as much as possible. And so this was actually the perfect opportunity, really the perfect video to actually get the name out and what we were really trying to do.
When did you first come up with, Schoolyard Rap, a brand? Is it a company? Mm-hmm. Is it an LLC?
It's a company. It's a sole prop right now. We're moving on to LLC at the end of this tax season. I'm getting those last taxes.
Okay, I hear you.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Do that LLC after that because, I'm assistant principal currently and I'm leaving. And so I want to have that protection with the LLC. So, Schoolyard is a company. It is a movement. It is a brand.
Yeah,
it is,
all of that.
It is basically education through entertainment. I mean, that's our motto. It's just trying to make sure what is being taught is fun and is actually engaging to our students, especially students of color who slip through the cracks oftentimes. And, you know, the content that's taught to them isn't really relevant to them. And the style that it's being taught isn't really responsive, like culturally responsive teaching. And so Schoolyard Rap is really there to actually change the way we teach and way we think about teaching, and then providing teachers and families and colleges with resources to make this this content actually engaging and good to know.
Yeah. When you were growing up, was that something that maybe you struggled with, like in school, like paying attention in history class and like how it was taught or what they were teaching?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you had, like if it was taught in like rap form, you probably would have been more tuned in, right?
Right. Nah, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember sitting in the back of the class, like what's she talking about?
Yeah.
You know, teacher saying, close all your mouths, ain't no talking out. You know, like worksheet after worksheet. She know my name, but she don't know me. It's boring and it's easy. So I'm speaking to the homies and the teacher kicked me out of the class. I got home, I'm a whooping.
Yeah.
Me fast. And so, you know, it's like I used to think the teacher crazy, but see, now I know that she was lazy. And I'm an 80s baby. These kids are facing complacency. They got attitudes, angry all up in class. Like, I ain't mad at you. And that's why we're trying to rap to you, because they said I had ADD.
Right, but
whoa.
I was like,
is he rapping right now? It was so
seamless.
Right, I was like,
first of all,
so if you ever try this, I tell Ben all the time. My ultimate goal in life, one of them is like to finish. Every time I go out, like to a lounge or a club, whatever, meet some people, I try to do the Fresh Prince intro, like I know them, like I'm from West Philadelphia. That's where I was born and raised. And I used to play on the playground.
Right,
I was chilling. A couple of guys, right, up to no good.
Right,
but yeah, that's how Schoolyard Rap started. Because yes, when I was a kid, it was important for things to be fun. And yes, I was labeled as a kid who had all this high energy, and I was kicked out a lot. I was in trouble, but ultimately it was because I was bored out of my mind.
Yeah,
because what was being taught was being taught. First of all, it was never taught to me like why it was important to learn. It was just sit down, shut up, learn this.
Right.
And then the method in which it was being brought to me and didn't engage me or stimulate me in any way. And so, when you have a lot of, you know, students, they're pushed out of class, especially people of color, because we're a little different. You know what I'm saying? We're a little more rhythmic, more oratory, and we need some, you know, different ways to being taught. And so you get a lot more discipline issues because of that. They're, you know, talking in class. They're bad kids. They're too hyper. But no, it's just, you know, you're boring as a teacher.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, you know, it's funny the way that music can engage you, because I remember my mom, if a song would come on the radio, I could I could do the whole song like word for word. So I was sitting there rapping or singing, and she would turn off the radio, and she looked back at me and she said, "Do you know your math formulas the way you know the song?" And I was stuck. Right. Mom, I was stuck. I was like, and she, you know, she was like, "Why do you know this music, but you don't know your history or your formula?" Well, I didn't have history was like the only class that I actually liked, but. Hey, but yeah, you know, with math and sciences and all of these other subjects, it's, I don't know, something about music sticks, you know, and it could be just the beat, it could be the snares, it could just be that it's the vibrations from the ancestors, so it's in us and innate and built in us. I don't know, but that's interesting the way that music has an impact to gain and garner our attention like that.
Absolutely.
I'm curious though, so you say, you know, you were labeled as ADD. So what trajectory did you take then to become associate principal?
My mom wouldn't buy into the ADD stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, that didn't add up.
Yeah.
Any book I read that interests me, I was mad stuck. You know, it's like, so she wouldn't do me the drugs. And then she's like, nah, he's just hyper. This is just things changed my diet a little bit. But education was always ingrained in my mom's using education. So she was knowledgeable enough to know these are the things that you need to do to kind of engage him. Mm-hmm. And as I got older, I realized through all my career paths and ups and downs and lives, I realized as a black man at the age of when I was fresh out of college, I had more power to actually impact the kids' lives that look like me than if I did at an older age. Because I was going to go into culinary school because I really loved cooking. And
that
would have
been dope.
It would have. Oh, I copy. It's called Brown. Well, I can't say it. It's called Brown Sugar Boulevard. That's trademark. It's copyrighted. It was a bakery in college, right? But at that age, it was like.
Shout out.
Yes, really. It's a good thing. we oftentimes like think about personal gain. And a lot of people are like that. Mm. And that's fair for them, right? However, just the way I was raised and really just the way I am, you know, everybody's a little different. Like I was always in the church, I had a calling all my life, but I realized what that is just, I have this like inward desire to help others and to uplift others. And so, education was the natural platform, especially as a black male, not having, you know, but one black male teacher my entire life. Like I should have, and I went into because of that.
Yeah. Wow. I'm trying to think.
What?
Have you ever had a black male teacher?
Hmm.
There was one at Oak Grove.
Oh, really?
Remember the science teacher? I don't know his name.
I don't know his name. But I didn't have him. Yeah, I didn't have him.
We have one
either.
Black male teacher at Oak Grove High School. Shout out to Oak Grove High School.
Yeah.
Eagles, what's up? 10-year anniversary is coming up, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Showing our age.
Showing your age.
But my first black teacher that I ever had was actually in college in Maine, and he was half black. Not that it matters.
Mm.
But even a black woman teacher. Did you have
one? I'm really trying to think.
I'm straight.
I had one black female teacher. She was a professor at my college. She taught sociology, and that was it. Yeah. So it took me like 20 years to have a black teacher. Right. Yeah.
Mm. Ben?
Mm-hmm. I had a few.
Okay.
A couple in high school, and I think maybe one in college.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so maybe
Massachusetts.
the high school I went to in Bedford High, no. Very non-diverse.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just because those might have been two of four or five out of a huge high school or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, not, no. Don't give them no credit.
Okay, we take the shout out back.
But I mean, it's a points to a bigger problem.
Right, like,
exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Representation matters, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need more role models that look like the students.
Exactly.
Plain and simple.
Exactly. What was it like growing up in Richmond and in the school? What did the schools look like? How was that?
So I'm from L.A.
Oh.
I moved to Richmond to start a school.
Growing
up in Richmond, Coach Carter, maybe? That's what I thought about when I moved up to Richmond.
Okay. So how long ago did you move to Richmond?
3 years ago I moved to
Richmond. Okay. That's what's up.
Went to College of Davis, and all my boys are from the Bay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All my boys are from the Bay. Mm-hmm. West Oakland, shout out Jesse. Y'all people in my fraternity, Omega Psi Phi fraternity, go right to the press.
Whoa!
Wait a minute. Pause.
Yeah. That was a quick,
Okay, I heard West Oakland.
Yes, they're all
so from. We live in West Oakland.
Okay.
If you listen to, anyway.
I heard Omega Psi Phi.
Yeah.
I'm a Delta.
What's up with it?
I don't know what
Room
that means.
Room to the breast. Anyway, bring it back.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know what that means. Yeah.
But growing up in L.A., I'm not from the Bay, right?
Yeah.
And yet, I realize there are a lot of similarities as far as, and a lot of differences. L.A. is a lot of pockets, right? The Bay Area is much more, from what I've gathered as, you know, a principal here, is much more diverse and a lot more intersectionality between people. Mm. L.A. is, you know, it's low-key segregated. And so that's where I grew up. Like a pocket where I grew up, like a little middle-class area, but that's a 3 or 4 block radius. And then right outside is like rolling 60s neighborhood. You got the 40s down the block, the gangs, right? So it's just pockets. And then Latino areas all over here. So it's a little different, but the Bay Area is lit and it's woke. And I like the Bay Area. It's a second home now. I'd stay up here. The weather sucks, but other than that.
For you, yeah. I mean, we. Ben, on the other hand, loves the weather here. I know that. I know that. You are the other hand. So you moved to Richmond 3 years ago. You said to start or school or to work?
Okay. We started school. Yeah,
you can build a school ground up.
Not my hands, but yes. But the actual personnel, the curriculum, not the curriculum necessarily. Well, we purchased the curriculum, the culture of the school, everything. Through the Aspire Charter School Network, they afforded us the opportunity to come and work here through our principal, Arlena Ford, who was a Delta as well. And we started a Richmond Technology Academy right across the street from Hilltop Mall.
Okay.
It was a great opportunity.
Can we talk about the educational landscape in California? I don't know if you have, or even just in the Bay Area, because I know charter schools are a really big thing, but did we have this many charter? Were charter schools that big? Like,
I think they're bigger
15 years ago
in Oakland than San Jose.
San Jose, the South Bay. It might be a little bit different. So, what charter schools are public schools, correct? But they have a bit of autonomy because they kind of come out. Do they build their own curriculum?
So, yeah, charter schools, when they write what is called their charter, right, they have the ability to dictate why their school will be different or the terms of the school. Like, there's schools, it's like Gabrielle Charter School in L.A. They're, every kid takes dance classes, like, every year. And that's part of their incorporation. Their schools is military academies. There are charter schools where they have military regiments. So every school, when they are charter, they just say, this is what we're going to do different. And they really start bursting and booming this past 10 years because, be honest, the financial implications of it. I mean, you have... This is a, I'll speak candidly, it's America.
This is a safe space. Yeah.
This is America. It's a capitalistic country. And so what charter schools provide are opportunities to make profit off of education, right? And so where it's good is if your product is good. It's like with anything, like with crack, with money, with the good music we make. Like if your product is good, then it's okay. Like, I will support the investment and it's good for the community. Because they're looking for something better than what they get a lot of times in public schools. And so charter schools feed on that hope. So if it's a good product, the school is good, then yes. But a lot of times you have these schools and they're not the best. And so they're feeding on this hope and desperation and wanting a better life. And they're, you know, CEOs, the COOs, these people at the top, they're profiting money off of it. Because it's a, you know, nonprofit. You can get paid as a director or a CEO. You get money from the nonprofit. And so there are some corrupt cases. The school I'm at, Spire Public Schools, is a good school. I like it. Shout out to Spire.
When you say the product, do you mean the school or the students?
I mean the school. I mean the kids go in and parents put their kids for a better education, a better life than what a public school will offer them. Because that's the big game of charter schools. You have a choice to go there, right? So you don't have to go to your public school. You can go to this charter school. If the product, meaning like the school environment, the teachers, like the actual advancement of education and getting the kids to a level and beyond what they should be, if that is lackluster, it's subpar, then it's not a wise investment. Yet parents are soaking their, like putting their kids in there because they want the hope of it. And so, ultimately charter schools, if they're good, it's good. Great. If they're not, then it's just, they're just taking money from a situation. Yeah. And that's why you see so many now in this area, is because it's a financial opportunity.
Well, and also, too, it might be because of just the resources or the lack thereof are public schools. And we've noticed in Oakland, San Francisco, Richmond, and I think really anywhere in Alameda County, these schools are very underperforming. And there's a lot of politics involved in what school, which students go to which district. A lot of students go to schools that are outside of their city. You know, kids in San Francisco will go to school in Alameda, will go to school in the South Bay. Even growing up in high school, we had a lot of kids from Oakland, a lot of kids from East Palo Alto, from Richmond, and we're like, what y'all doing? Going to schools. But when you look at, you know, shout out to everybody from Auto City. But we were just, you know, we're kids and we're like, wait, why is everyone?
It's a long bus ride from Richmond to San Jose. Yeah. Jesus.
That's a long, it's a push. That's a really mm-hmm. long.
It's like a 6-hour commute.
It's like two parts.
We're from where?
From Richmond. Richmond, right? I mean, we went from Oakland to Palo Alto yesterday and it took us an hour and 45 minutes to get down there.
Oh, yeah. Did you drive?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What time?
Yeah, that time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. That's tough. But yeah, it just seems like charter schools also are a byproduct of just public schools failing in our cities. And I don't know if that's a resource thing, if that's a funding thing. We're certainly not a resource lacking or a funding lacking state. I mean, we have money. Mm-hmm. We actually have money. The state has money. Mm-hmm. So...
education just isn't invested in, like, military or healthcare or any of these. It's not a priority for this country. So we're seeing the byproducts of it. And there's, like, you have to kind of go above and beyond to perform, to have a good performance school in this country. You have to work magic or like you said, start a charter and do it kind of your own way. But there is the flip side that you are kind of taking those resources from the public school side, and then if you don't like the student, you just send them back, which is not the same thing. So I think there could be positive and negative. It's all about what you do with that power, but that's we're seeing the byproduct, the military budget.
The budget is made by those who the money, you know, they don't need to put their kids in public or charter schools, so therefore they're not concerned about education as much as people, the populace or people are voting. And to go to your question, I think the big difference is why so many resources, it's not necessarily lack of resources when it comes to public or charter. What it is a lot of lack of bureaucracy when it comes to public schools. You know, you have your unions, you have the way like the public schools are set up where like, a teacher does something, they can't be fired or be removed.
Oh, yeah. Like our police officers.
Girl. Okay. Yeah. So that's really the difference. It's just the structure and how public schools have set up. It's like one of those old institutions.
Yeah.
Because it's an old institution, it has certain ways of doing things. And charter schools are like that new wave of coming in and doing things in a new light, and especially in the Bay Area. I like a lot of the schools up here because they're thinking about, you know, equity as opposed to equality. They're thinking about, you know, social justice, education. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the Oakland Unified School District, shout out to them because they put, you know, African-American studies as a core subject, and, like, students have the option of taking that. Like there are public schools, there's some good work is being done in public schools. It's just overall a lot of charter schools are popping up because they have more autonomy and power to hire who they want, and if you're not working, we're at will, you can deuces and get out of here and find somebody who is going to work better.
I also noticed that a lot of visual arts and just arts in general, like in the Bay Area, we are excelling. I think there's OSA, Oakland School of Arts. We excel and our students excel in the arts. So whether that is edutainment, whether that is visual media, all of that, we are so strong and have core competency there. But in these standardized tests, which is what I think a lot of schools grade their performances on, right? And that's how they get funding, or that's how they make it on these rankings. So what can we do, or what can you do, you know, on that side, right? As producers, how do we get these kids to perform better? Or how do we change curriculum? Is it opening up charter schools and changing the curriculum so our kids can excel?
Well, everyone has their part to play in this game, right? And see, mine is, you know, I feel like it's God's design. It aligns with my name, you know, because I've been given this gift to, like, tell stories like Rick and teach like KRS-One with dissertation so lit, the flame emoji lives in my listeners recently sent. So it's... my Another job one. Is, I know, you're welcome. No, seriously, my job is really, I think, to make effective change, I am taking on the role of providing different ways to teach. So Squeal Rap is providing curriculum to teachers. Like, yo, this is the subject, Bill of Rights. You know, they have to learn it based on the standards. How do we make that fun and applicable? Okay, let's tie Bill of Rights into the Black Panther's 10-point program. Or let's tie the Bill of Rights into, you know, Colin Kaepernick and his Second Amendment and First Amendment rights. And that's how you make it fun. See, it's called about activating schema. And that's like making it relatable to students in some way. And then like infusing joy within it to make it not just relatable, but now now, okay, I want to learn about this, or this seems interesting to learn. Oh, it's actually fun to learn. That's where the music comes in and the visual media that Big Pincher Anthems does. And, you know, we could sit here for literally hours to kind of hash out the ideas of what can be fixed. But it all comes with money at the end of it. And willing participants to actually put forth the effort and use their gifts to make the change. And that's my area, is to teach in different ways and teach teachers how to teach, really thinking about the whole child in mind.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And part of what I wanted to respond on is what you said earlier as a kid. You know, and the same thing here. I mean, not knowing why you're learning what you're learning. And for me, it's the reason why we're in Palo Alto, just to give you a historical context, is my father's actually from Palo Alto, and my grandfather was a math professor at Stanford.
Okay, shout out.
Nice.
And
OG Gilbart.
Yeah,
OG.
And I mean, you know, like as a kid growing up, we used to come out here and visit, but I didn't really know the magnitude of how like influential he was in his field. And it turns out his book on partial differential equations of the second order was like one of the most influential texts for mathematicians, period, around the world. And our schools are so ineffective that neither me nor my brother were interested in math. And it wasn't because my father, my father was like, he had that gene and he was like, come on, what are you guys doing? But because a few reasons. Once algebra came into play and the letters, and you're like, why, where are these letters come from?
Yeah.
But why? So the why is never presented. It's just always like, students are treated like factory. You know, you're going to be a factory worker and just obey,
right?
Yeah. Like a educational slave. And it was boring white men for the most part who were my math teachers in middle school and high school.
Same.
And not passionate. They never had anyone come into the class or come into the school and said, hey, this is how we use algebra. Right. This is how we use geometry. So my only motivation was making sure I had a decent grade so my parents wouldn't punish me, essentially. Right. So when I was done with high school math, I went to college. I still had a requirement. I took like erroneous beliefs. It was like a logic class just because I didn't want the actual math. And that's a travesty because...
I did that too.
Because it's a missed opportunity. So to flip it on what we're doing now. So Steam the Streets, one of the things we do is we bring in speakers to classes, and we do this video series called Steam Powered. So we're actually going to release one very soon, which is a director of engineering at Pandora Radio.
Oh, nice.
And Myra Benjamin, big shout out. Dominican,
what's
actually.
What's up, Myra?
Shout out to Myra.
She grew up in East Oakland.
Oh, nice.
In this video.
Triple unicorn.
Yeah, exactly.
Pandora's doing a lot right now.
Yeah, it's a good time.
In the video, she talks about how they use linear algebra as part of the engineering process to tell you which song gets played next in your radio station. Mm-hmm. So there's this work that goes into that, all these algorithms. And so if I'm a kid hearing that, I'm like, oh. That like connects the dots for me.
Yeah.
So then we have speakers come in. One guy's saying how he designs video games and he uses geometry to make a certain angle. He uses decimals because you can, you know, if you want it 10.5 inches up the screen, you got to do 10.5. So she's actually using decimals that an elementary kid could use. So the why is really important to make those connections. So because you could do tons of things with math and like or science, you know, all these different disciplines, but our teachers and guidance counselors are like, oh, you can be an accountant or a math teacher. Or like, are you kidding me? You know what I mean? Like, and so this is part of the problem that we're trying to solve, is that the awareness of an ever-changing world, a lot of these professionals are still stuck in 1985, which, all right, these are the fields, and the things are evolving so quickly. I mean, 10 years from now, it's going to be totally different.
Totally new technology.
You know what I mean? So
I still don't know robots. Our current technology.
Right. And on go ahead.
No, I'm good.
On our past episode, we actually like interviewed a few Black women in tech, and one of the girls said the way she got into coding was through Bow Wow.
Little Bow Wow.
Bow Wow.
And
she was such a fan that she would go on the little website and just saw how terrible it was, and so she was like, this should look better. Like, you know, Bow Wow needs a better website. So she went and learned how to code. And
really?
So Bow Wow wasn't talking about coding.
He wasn't. But
and this was like when Bow Wow first came out. So this is like, right. late 90s, early
2000s maybe.
Yeah.
But it just like made me think, because like when you see math and when you see science, it can be so intimidating for students. Yeah. Just seeing all the numbers and the formulas and all that. And I feel like sometimes, like you were saying, you know, when you hear a Pandora engineer come in and say, well, this is how we use it with the algorithms, you know, and a student hears that, that makes it exciting. But I feel like a lot of the times, and that's why I commend you and like you guys with Schoolhouse Rap and sorry.
Schoolyard rap.
I keep thinking of Schoolhouse Rock. Schoolyard Rap.
Conjunction Junction.
Schoolyardrap.com.
Wow.
Yes.
And Black made that. And just thinking of the teachers who.
Black like that. Yeah, that's a new song.
Black like that. Black made that. Where my patent at? Okay.
Where my patent at?
But that takes a lot of work for the teachers to put in that sort of curriculum together.
Yeah.
So that takes a lot of work. Yes. But a lot of the teachers aren't necessarily willing to put in that work to make the curriculum interesting and make it fun. And I'm wondering, you know, why is it that teachers, like, what goes into maybe the teachers aspect of it?
Yeah, do they have the, like, do they have the clout, the authority to sit there and question the superintendent or question, like, the education board and say, hey, you know what, this is not working. Let's implement. I mean, at charter schools, as you said, they have that, I think, more power to do that there. But in public schools, how much weight does a teacher's input have?
It's little. I mean, public schools are very regimented, and even, you know, the education or the curriculum is very hegemonic. Like, this is what we're teaching in this district, and anything above or different from that has to be approved by the district first, right? And that's not to say public schools aren't using it. It's just to say oftentimes it's another loophole and another hurdle teachers have to go over in order to do it. Now, some schools, they allow teachers to change things up, but for the most part, if the results aren't where it is, or, you know, takes a while for it to get to where you want it to be, they'll, you know, administrators come and say, no, that's not what we're doing. We're doing this because they have this tried, tested, you know, 1986 way of teaching, and this is what's going to get us the results that we need. Charter schools do have a lot more autonomy when it comes to curriculum. I taught in charter schools. And so as a teacher, I was able, and that's how Schoolyard Rap started. I started making music in my class just because it was different, right? History Alive was the curriculum we use, and I made music to kind of use the information that needed to be learned for test, and I just made it more fun for the students, right? And I added my own. I want to say teachers have a hard job, whether in public or in charter schools. Like, it's a difficult, thankless job. Oftentimes, it's hard to, you know, be a nurse, a counselor, you know, an educator. That's what a teacher is. There are all these things at once. Sometimes a part-time mama in some cases, a part-time social worker. Like, teachers, they hold on so much, and so then to make their own curriculum on top of that, it's difficult.
Yeah.
It is so hard because of the time. And especially if you're in a charter school, because you're, you know, like if you work at KIPP, you have a cell phone and you're supposed to be on the clock technically to 8 o'clock. Like, they give you a cell phone and you have to pick up any parent phone calls until the nighttime.
A lot of charters are like that.
A lot of charters like that. And so, yes, it's more timey and you get paid a little more, but it's more work, right? Yeah. And so people who have this passion to make change, a lot of times they're burnt out after like 2-3 years because they're putting all this, they're trying to be agents of change. They're allies for the Black folks, they white people. You know what I'm saying? They're trying to do something different. And it seems a lot of times they're butting their head against the wall. And
there's a lot of turnover, right?
Oh, very much so.
Especially in the charters.
Especially in the charters. One, because you don't have the tenure track. Two, because some charters, you know, let's be honest, they don't have their hiring scale.
The organizational structure.
Right. It's a little different. And so it's like this. Pick your poison. I mean, there's going to be bad in both. You know, it's like as a person who's trying to be an agent of change, a teacher who's trying to change lives, you can either go public or charter. It's just there's going to be problems with both, you know? And so what we're trying to do ultimately is just provide resources for them to make it easier for them. We're trying to make it like do professional developments to show them little tactics that, you know, I picked up over the time and the research that I've studied to make my teachers' lives better and my own classroom better. And so that's what we have to do.
So shout out again, the school that you work at?
Richmond Technology Academy, RTA.
Okay. And it's K through 12?
It's K-5.
K-5.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Some of those kids were tall, though.
So we partnered with our sister school, Cal Prep, and then De'Anza High School. Shout out De'Anza High School. Okay. And the Rich. We went there. I've been lecturing there for the past 3 years and for Black History Month.
Okay. That was fun.
Yeah, it was.
You were there, too?
I was behind the camera.
For the music video.
For the music video. Okay.
But it was dope. After the music video, I did the lecture in this February, and they're like, "Yo, play the video." They're all juice.
So I want to talk about the writing process, and then we can talk about the filming directing process. What you said, Black Made That was one single off of the album. Mm-hmm. And what's the name of the album again?
The name of the album is Our Story. O-U-R Story. It's one word. Not history, but Our Story. Okay. 18 tracks of Black Facts. Available on Apple. I'm done. All right.
So it's not it's not his story.
I saw that thing on Spotify. Story.
It's not his story. It's Our Story. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal. Every place where streaming services are available. Also at schoolyourrap.com, hard copies. We have those too.
Okay. So, yeah, let's talk about your writing process. Yes. Are you just a wordsmith? That's just what you do? Do you take time? Do you have co-writers? How does this work?
No, I write everything myself.
No ghostwriters?
No, I don't believe that. No, the gift, I think God gave me two gifts, the ability to write and then the ability to speak to people. And so when it comes to writing, it varies. Like sometimes I just have an impassioned idea, right? Mm-hmm. And so I just like, yo, I need to write about this. Other times I have a specific purpose. Like I want to teach about this. And so when it comes to the teaching songs, it's okay, what's the best way to teach, right? So Black Made That, I felt it was very important to one, list a bunch of Black inventions, but also how can I make it relatable? How can I activate that schema and make it like, why should I learn this? And so I said, what's the best way? Oh man, when you wake up, like you hit the switch, the room lights up, right? Yo, that's Black Made. And so what else you as a kid that you're going through school and you're just packing and getting ready for the bus, like what else do you see that is Black Made that you don't even know about? And so the delivery of the song, the first two verses are all about that, like explaining things that every day that you will need or go through that are made by Black people. And then the third verse is all about, and that's pretty much how I use in the album in general. The third verse is kind of the introspective, the tying it. Like I want to use the third verse for a lot of high school, colleges, that higher level thinking. So I'm talking not just about Black Made, but also what happens to these inventions. Why aren't Black people getting recognition? So I start talking about, you know, cultural appropriation. You know, I start talking about rock and roll and, you know, Chuck Berry versus Elvis. And I think that's very essential because, yes, you get the knowledge. But then the second part is how has this affected our country as a whole? And, you know, though it's a Black history album, the first of its kind, it's an American album, and that's why I'm always trying to push this. Yes, I want Black folks to hear it first. I want all of us to know about it. But also, I think white people should hear it. Oh, I think it's something where ultimately if you know about the contributions of these fellow Americans, because that's what we are. We're all American in this situation. Like, it's only going to dilute, like, the ignorance that you have, right? And the bigotry is created from ignorance. And so you need to see, it needs to be tied together.
Well, I also thought how you talk about you know, if you only know slavery and Dr. King, you're missing just a whole big part of the story.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and if a white person knows more of that, it's like inherently you're going to look at that with more respect as opposed to, oh, it's enslaved population than Dr. King. Like, so lackluster, you know, after even, you put it that way.
Yeah, even there was a line in the song where the girl's like, wait, Mr. Whatever. She's like, I thought philosophy was from Greece or something. Like, no, God made that.
Yeah.
That's from Egypt.
Greek philosophy, Greek made that. Yeah. No, philosophy from Egypt, we made that. That. Right. And I thought that's important, right? Because all we hear is this one-sided, hegemonic, like very white-centered doctrine of education or history, right? And, you know, to the victor goes the writing of history.
Right.
However, there's so much history about Africans and African Americans that we aren't taught that is very crucial. Been touched on a point like in the intro of the album, like I talk like that's my why, the why I wrote this album. I say, you know, in school they teach us half truths and nothing about our past at all. We never learn we ruled the court. All you know, and I ain't talking basketball. We were kings and queens and merchants, innovators, making things, doctors, lawyers, warriors. Every is, we made every e. But all they ever teach our kids are slavery and Dr. King, right? And then one of my students, she says, if I'm only taught that my mother is dirt and my mother is poor and my mother's only history is slaves, nothing more, How can I look in the mirror and see something to adore? Mm. How can I believe that my worth is something much more?
Chills.
And that's truth. Because it's real.
No, that
that's the plan, though, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that, like, I feel like when, you know, they write the history books, when they write the curriculum, that's the plan. Like, let's keep it real, centered around slavery mm-hmm. and how they were slaves. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this guy came along and kind of liberated them a little bit.
Yes.
And that's it. And y'all are here. Yeah. And, like,
you have
we're
no
in
other
class. Right.
Zero.
That's it.
Scurry along.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And what's the subtext between that, right?
Yeah.
Like slavery. Nothing. What were we slavery? We were subservient. We weren't. And even in slavery, you don't talk about, like, how we built the White House or the mm-hmm. Washington Monument, Booker T. Washington, or how we slave rebellions. I mean, we talk about Spartacus, but we don't talk about, like, Nat Turner or the Stonewall Rebellion. Like, so you have slavery. We were subservient. We were in an unfortunate condition in this country, and then we were freed because of Lincoln, the white man saved us, you know, and then after that, you know, we are treated badly, but mainly and only in the South, because that's where the bad people are, and then Dr. King, he was a doctor and he cured racism, and then he had a dream, and then that's it. So it's like you teach either subservient, docile, a position of destitute and hopelessness, and then once again a position of hopelessness again through civil rights, but then the strong fighting passion of, like, this one central hero, and then we were freed, but we got freed through getting beat up, and we had to get the government to give us permission. We don't teach about Malcolm X or Marcus Garvey or these other ideologies, and this ain't anti-white, but what it is it needs to be taught. We need to have more of a context, Black, white, Latino, Asian, like, we need to understand how this country really works and what happens in this country to really go, and that's how you don't elect Trump, because you know you don't hear just one story. You hear everything, right?
And all of those things too tie into, like, your self-image and your self-worth. So if you're seeing little representation in your schools, and you're reading that all your contributions in life were just to be slaves and be shipped on boats and Britain being called Great Britain and the implications of this white country being called Great Britain, you know, and the prefix of its name, it's like, that is damaging.
Look how many films were just almost like the same story, you know, like slavery,
the slave
story.
You know, and obviously Black Panther was a great deterrent, you know, nice exit off the road of that. You know what I mean?
No more. Huge right turn.
The highest grossing, you know what I'm saying? It was big. It was
huge.
A change of the narrative.
But even when they try to do stories on, like, Cleopatra, Elizabeth Taylor plays Cleopatra.
Right.
Angelina Jolie plays Cleopatra.
Man,
as if there was not an Egyptian woman that they could have, you know.
Why do we always portray with white faces in the movies?
Exactly.
Right.
Was Denzel too busy? Is Lupita not a beauty?
He was probably, actually. He probably was. That's, I guess, the writing process of it. And then, so directing.
Yeah.
How do you listen to something like that and come up with the vision?
The first part is, like, I gotta like it. You know, because I know at that point I'm gonna probably listen to it 4,000 or 5,000 times. So the first step is really listening to it and just kind of, like, digesting what's being said, getting a copy of the lyrics. One thing about that song is it's like rapid fire facts. It's just so much built into it. The shoots are great. I think we accomplished a lot in a little time, especially what we did out in Richmond, basically not even 2 full days of shooting.
Whoa.
And we had some great young people who were just like, hey, you want to pop out of this locker and say astronomy? And,
they were popping.
Philosophy.
2-3 takes and we'd get it. And you want to pop out of this door and say, school, yeah, rap. And, you know, and it wasn't always, especially with the music video process, like, that's what I love doing, the, you know, big picture anthems. That name came from having fun and seeing that model of that music video or an anthem for a certain cause or a certain, you know, Black inventors. Like,
I like that.
That's kind of my trademark in terms of what I like to do and what I see has a lot of potential. But there's still kind of these, you know, these trolls out there that comment on the video, wherever that may be in the stratosphere, that'd be like, well, actually, peanut butter was created by the Aztecs, and you know, the first game console was 1973 by this dude in Japan, and they'll have paragraphs trying to prove it wrong.
Yeah,
which is,
you can stay mad.
Yeah,
okay?
Just crazy.
That's what you can do.
I wish these trolls would turn to stone when they see our light. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
So what is the? Okay, so you made the video. It's out everywhere for people to view. Is there, like, a goal in terms of maybe possibly getting it shown in schools, or like, what's the like huge goal, like the end goal with the video?
You want me to take that?
Go ahead. You got that.
So with Steam the Streets, we do school assemblies, mm-hmm. and we're trying to put together a Steam the Streets tour right now, which, you know, if any school, mm-hmm. anywhere, if you want us, let us know. But essentially, we take our school assembly, like we infuse some of the profile videos. So like the Pandora Myra mm-hmm. Benjamin video is one of those. We have another music video called The Steam Anthem. We have Black Made That. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we have Dynamic Presentation, which showing it puts, so we ask kids like, okay, how many kids use Snapchat? How many use Snapchat? And everyone uses Snapchat, right? Right. So it's like, all right, well, how do those filters that you use get made? All right. That's graphic design. Someone's job is doing that. Someone's job is figuring out the machine learning to recognize, to the facial recognition. Someone's job is making that website that you see. Mm-hmm. How did the Golden State Warriors build a dynasty? Mm-hmm. How many people like the NBA? Mm-hmm. So it's all this back and forth mm-hmm. going to what they're interested in. And it's like a culturally responsive approach.
Reverse,
you know? Yeah. So we're saying like, oh, we put a cheeseburger as a slide, a juicy cheeseburger. How many people know that you could be a food scientist? You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. that's our program does all that. And when you infuse videos like Black Made That and all these profile videos, it's like an adrenaline shot of just mm-hmm. awareness and empowerment and education. And if you don't know what's out there, you don't know what you can become.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But if you're like, hey, there's 200 different careers in this, I mean, that's in STEM. I mean, we would go with STEAM because the arts, it's inclusive, right?
Exactly.
It's more encompassing. And arts is in everything, design, engineering, mm-hmm. you name it, there's arts in it. You can do so much on your own nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the key is like, how do you build up that that grit, that perseverance? Mm-hmm. Because to do stuff on your own, you need discipline. It's where, you know, these generations are instant gratification societies, mm-hmm. and they don't have, overall, in general, mm-hmm. don't have the grind that maybe earlier generations have. So if we're able to teach that grind and to go hard even as a young person, and to have all those soft skills mm-hmm. as we teach them, the sky's the limit, man.
Yeah,
you know,
sky's the limit.
You guys want to shout out your social media and where they can find you?
So at the Griot B, THE Griot B, that's GRIOTB. The T is silent, like D and Django. And I put the G in angle because I'm coming at this rapping different. Vicious how I'm angle. Every beat I'm on, I kick it heavy-footed like some cankles. And that is my Instagram.
Cankles.
Cankles. Facebook. Schoolyard Rap at Facebook. And then YouTube, where the video lives. Schoolyard Rap channel on YouTube. A lot of stuff out there. Once again, the Black History album, First of Its Kind, is our story. We're working on a Latino History album right now. Ooh. We're working on a musical for next year. It's going to be... Yeah, musical. It's gonna be a lituation. It's gonna air. Yeah, you're gonna beep that out. I want people knowing all the secrets.
But
you know, it's gonna be. It's a good year. Like, Schoolyard Rap is thriving. It's gonna thrive.
All right, for myself personally, Ben Gilbarg. Pretty simple on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
How do you spell Gilbarg?
GILBARG.
Now do it in a rhyme like I did.
So,
GI to
and y'all don't know, I'm a retired MC. I got three albums under my belt.
Oh,
so.
Son. What?
Everybody
the word retired is the word.
Oh, snap.
Okay.
I can spit some if you want.
Ooh, is this a game?
Right,
right.
I've never heard this. I've been asking to do this for a minute.
Exclusive.
Now I hear it.
Exclusive.
An artist using images as instruments and picturing my people not blistering from ignorance. The sun's glistening, but at the same time attrition hits. Yesterday's wisdom is tomorrow, so primitive. Mm. But don't follow the hollow, so infinite. Take the time filling it till molecules get intimate. The prodigies make differences, create and pass on the properties and act of photosynthesis. Mm. Hip hop for me, an odyssey. It spoiled me with brain food so much my mind can't stop to beat. It roams like cops for weed and doesn't slow till it gets home. And then goes off in dreams. Mm. It's on constant feed, like belly of the beast, feed economy, or the top degree of human leech. This art's progressive, but the market's detrimental. We refugee camping because the vultures had to settle. Ooh. It echoes the same old material. All right, that's it.
Yeah.
What?
Boomer friend.
BG
in the bomb on it.
First B.
BG.
We're Funkmaster Flex.
But back to social media. So yeah. Ben Gilbart, find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and then Big Picture Anthems. YouTube, we love. We subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Yes,
we got some great videos on there, and you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter as well. Big Picture Anthems, or Big Pick Anthems in some cases. But
okay,
awesome.
Build
pretty much, you can find them anywhere,
any and everywhere.
Find it though. Yes,
exactly. We appreciate what y'all do. Yes. Shout out to the arts. Shout out to teachers. My dad's actually a teacher.
Really?
Yeah, yes. He got his PhD in educational leadership.
Love it.
Nice. So. I respect and appreciate everything you guys do.
Much respect.
And kind of bridging the gap, and you guys quite literally bridging the gap and using music as your weapon in this. So we appreciate y'all, really. All right, guys, that was it. What did you guys think? We hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yes.
Also, if you guys are, you know, concerned parents or older siblings, or you notice a child that may not be getting the most out of their current education, be sure to check out Schoolyard Rap and view all the educational content there that can provide you alternative curriculum that may engage the child in your life better.
Yes. And with that, thank you guys for listening to this episode. You guys know where to find us. We are Wokeland Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Catch us on Spotify. Holla back.
And stay woke.